Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome back. Before we jump into our program, I just want to remember somebody who just passed away the other night, Brenda Vogel. Brenda Vogel was a warrior. She was a woman who fought for the rights of prisoners in this country, in this city, in the state, her whole life. She was a librarian at in our prison system there for 20 years, and she fought there for the rights of prisoners the whole time. She's been a fighter for human rights. She was a warrior for the rights of all people in this country, for human rights around the world and here. She grew up in a bar in Brooklyn and made her way up through life, was the wife of my dearest friend and mentor, Al Engelman. She passed away the other night at University of Maryland Hospital after a struggle with cancer, and she'll be missed. There are a lot of men who went through this prison system in the state of Maryland who went free, who found out their rights, who were able to fight better for their rights, because of Brenda Vogel and what she built at that place. She was Librarian of the Year, but she was a civil rights worker with SNCC in the South. She was always a warrior for peace and justice, always a warrior for the rights of the poor, always a warrior for the rights of prisoners and those we incarcerate too many of in our country, and we've lost her. But she lives on in our hearts and the hearts of the countless numbers of men that she helped while working in that prison system. And we'll say a bit more about her and have folks on about that soon to remember her and Brenda Vogel and all the people who love and around her, her family and people who are with her. We send our condolences, and we will miss you, Brenda. We are joined now by Mark Reuter. Mark Reuter is author of Making Steel. He covers Sparrows Point's steel mill and other stories for the Baltimore Brew, one of our great online papers here in Baltimore City. And they actually broke the story, Baltimore Brew did, Mark Reuter did for the Baltimore Brew, about an Argentine company that is trying to buy Sparrows Point. They hit the story first before anybody else did in the media in this area. Mark Reuter, welcome. Good to have you in the studio once again.
Thank you.
So the other day we did a show on unemployment and to ask people to tell us their stories and tales and about their lives of being unemployed. And with 17% of Americans out of work, underemployed, stopped looking for work, it's a lot of people. And a lot of those people live in Edgemere and Sparrows Point and Dundalk and Turner Station, the communities that were built around steel. And that day, a number of steel workers called in who've been laid off for quite some time.
Right.
And
right.
That's the world you cover.
That's correct. Sparrows Point has undergone a huge downsizing in the last few months. It normally has around 2,500 employees, around 1,800 of them with the United Steelworkers Union. Its parent company, Severstal, a Russian-based company, closed down the steelmaking furnaces this July and has proceeded without really any announcements, but we've been covering it in the Brew, to be closing the finishing mills, which is the other side of Sparrows Point. As a result, right now there are somewhere around 800 Sparrows Point employees who are on forced layoff. That's around half the union workforce, or a little around half. And then there's around probably 400, 500 who are on reduced time. And the company first said that it was going to close its steelmaking furnaces for 1 month to adjust its inventory. That was in July. Then they extended it to December 31st of this year. And recently they announced that they were extending it till at least through March of 2011. So this is very serious because not only for the number of employees being laid off, but when a steel mill, which is a very expensive operation to maintain and to run, is closed down, especially its furnaces, every day those furnaces are closed down, the likelihood that they will reopen without an enormous expense diminishes. So there's great fear that the parent company, which has been losing a lot of money, not because of Sparrows Point necessarily, but because of other overexpansion problems, may well be quietly and sort of stealthily closing down Sparrows Point before anyone quite notices it.
What would happen if that happened?
Well, it would have a major impact on the city. Sparrows Point once was the world's largest steel mill, 30,000 workers down there. It really was the dominant industry in the entire East, and in the 100-plus years it's been at Sparrows Point, it really created the east side of the city. It is still a big factor. It's the largest steel mill in the East in the United States. And it still, when it's operating, produces a heck of a lot of steel. It winds up producing around $20 million worth of steel per day, or around $1.6 billion a year. The economic impact on Baltimore, if that closes or remains hugely diminished as it is at the moment, will be severe, particularly over on the east side. The communities you mentioned that, you know, have for 100 years been built up on the strength of steel.
Hey, folks, I want you to join us here, if you would, at 410-319-8888. Many of you called in the other day when we did our program on unemployment and your stories about being unemployed, and many of you who called in were steel workers. Many of you listening to the show live on the east side of our town and whose families were in steel, been in steel yourself. Your thoughts on the future of the industry and the future of industry in America, of your lives built around that, what's happened to you. Perhaps you're still employed at the mill. Perhaps you were laid off from that mill. We want to hear your thoughts, stories, and ideas. Anybody can call in, but folks who are involved in that would love to hear your stories and all your comments about what all this means for America and for our communities here in Baltimore. 410-319-8888. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. So, Mark, I mean, the way steel helped build the middle class in this country, I mean, it was, along with auto, the
right.
underpinnings
of, that is correct.
Of building the coal miners, building of a middle class based on work and unions. And the demise of the unions and the demise of these mills, demise of these mills kind of go hand in hand.
That's correct.
In a lot of ways.
Yes.
I mean, you see the union almost powerless.
That's very
true. To affect what's going on right now.
That's true. The United Steelworkers of America have been organized that plant in 1941 after its first 50 years when it was a non-union plant, and certainly created a salary base and wage base that created a lot of prosperity for Baltimore. The steel industry has run into lots of competitive problems, as just about everyone knows. A lot of that was self-inflicted. The large steel companies like Old Bethlehem Steel that owned Sparrows Point had a huge facility down there, but they really stopped modernizing it, taking more money out than putting in. But in the last around 6-7 years, there's been major changes in the global steel industry, fascinating changes that mirror the changes in America's fortunes, economic fortunes. Essentially, foreign companies, first from India and now from Russia and increasingly from South America, are the dominant players in steel. And remember, even though steel has problems, and certainly Sparrows Point does, it remains the basic metal of the world. There's a huge amount of steel. It's internationally a giant industry. But in America, around half or more than half of U.S. production now is in the hands of foreign-owned companies. ArcelorMittal is the biggest, which once owned Sparrows Point in the early part of this decade, and now Severstal. And these, I think, have complicated matters because the unions are helpless, and they are seeing themselves as very helpless against an international company based in Moscow that has communication skills that are certainly different than what we're used to in America and has an agenda that no one really quite knows what its commitment is to America or to this plant.
And is there such a thing as the American Steel Company anymore? Are there American steel companies?
Yes. They're a minority of overall production. The largest American steel company remains American-owned and managed, and that's U.S. Steel. The second largest American steel company is Nucor, which is a mini mill and has been actually very prosperous using more modern technology. The third largest is called AK Steel out of Middletown, Ohio. But many of the older steel plants, such as Sparrows Point, the so-called integrated plants that use blast furnace technology, are now in the hands of foreign companies. In the case of Severstal, you sometimes think foreign countries because the Severstal and the Kremlin are actually very closely related in ways, and that's another fascinating aspect of this.
I mean, I remember I interviewed the president of Nucor many years back.
Ken Iverson.
Yes, and some of the workers in those plants. I mean, and they had a system then of not laying people off, of when the company had a downturn, everyone lost a little bit of money or lost a little time, and when everybody were making money, they were all making money. That the president is making more money than the workers, but that they try to keep things in a balanced way. I mean, it's managed, and it's a non-union company, I might add.
Yes, it is.
And so it's kind of interesting to watch how they're running this company and their survival and this kind of new way of trying to work with keeping people employed.
Well, Nucor, one of the myths about the American steel industry is that foreign steel, cheap foreign steel, dumped steel, created the problem and caused the reduction and loss of American steel jobs. That is really not true. It caused a few cases of that. But the main problem with American steel, traditional steel, plants like Sparrows Point, was that substitute products like aluminum and plastics began to take over markets that had been steel, and that Nucor, with its much more progressive business model and labor relations, may I add, began eating, in particular, Sparrows Point's lunch. Mm-hmm. Sparrows Point used to have a large wire and rod business, and Ken Iverson, the man you mentioned who died a few years ago, told me that that he was delighted to have Sparrows Point around because they could just pick and choose whatever contract they wanted and take it away from Sparrows Point. And part of the problem then with Sparrows Point, as part of the problem today, is that it was in the hands of a larger corporation in those days, Bethlehem Steel, who seemed to have a almost perverse way of doing business in which they lost business.
What about this new company you're talking about buying this company, this Argentinian company?
Right. What is going on is that there is a huge move by the United Steelworkers Union, to exert some power over their fate, to get Severstal to sell these plants. This includes Sparrows Point and two plants in the Midwest, Warren and Wheeling. All of these plants are basically been shut down, and the steelworkers have pressed Severstal to sell these plants. Severstal and their billionaire owner in Moscow, Alexei Mordachev, appears to be willing. Remember, trying to understand how this company works is kind of like the old criminologists who tried to see how the Politburo worked. It's very similar. The candidates that have so far been identified as possible bidders are not a particularly strong group in terms of their finances. However, we reported this week that a very interesting candidate has come forward, has expressed interest in Sparrows Point, has probably placed in a bid, has brought its executives to look at the plant. And this is potentially very exciting. It's called Ternium, T-E-R-N-I-U-M, Ternium. It's a steel plant based in Argentina. And it has been considered a very well-run company that does the same sort of finished steel production as Sparrows Point. In Latin America now, tin plate and other flat-rolled products are at a premium. There's a shortage down there. And Sparrows Point is a major producer of tin plate and other flat products. And it is, apparently, their business plan is to supply Sparrows Point with raw materials, which are now very costly to the plant and are not particularly reliable, to supply them with raw materials and then to export from Sparrows Point production down to Latin America. And the company does have deep pockets. It has a proven record of success, and it wants to get into the U.S. steel business.
So there was some conversation and talk. I remember when David Corton traveled the country with the steelworkers' representatives about steelworkers trying to move into buying companies, building cooperative companies. Is that not a reality?
It has not been successful, unfortunately. It was tried out at Weirton Steel with an employee buyout back in
West Virginia, right?
In West Virginia, and that did not prove over time to be very successful. In fact, it proved to be quite a fiasco, and many steelworkers whose pensions and other savings were drawn into that plan lost a heck of a lot of money. That plan and an idea has been bounced around many times, but does not seem to be particularly successful. What appears to be the most realistic hope for Sparrows Point, if it is going to remain a viable steel mill, is to get a strong company, particularly perhaps a foreign company, that has a fresh business plan. And right now, Sparrows Point is not particularly well positioned to compete in the U.S. market for a number of reasons. There's like Nucor, but with its access to the Atlantic seaboard, which no other steel plant in the U.S. has, it has some real possibilities to develop an export business. Severstal, in its wisdom, has actually closed the export pier at Sparrows Point, and they are, under national security rules, not able to export anything from the point as of the last 9 months.
Why?
It was apparently a move on their part to lower costs.
And U.S. is powerless to deal with them, powerless to help save these jobs and keep this mill going.
Well, this is a very interesting situation. With the news that's come out, and the Baltimore Brew has been at the forefront of these job losses, of what's going on at Sparrows Point, never announced by the company, it did inspire Governor O'Malley, Dutch Ruppersberger, and others to begin to have conversations with Severstal. The state government and the Maryland delegation is trying to broker some sort of deal here, and they should be commended for that. They're doing more than just talking, and so I think that they're trying to be proactive and represent Maryland's interests. Whether they're successful, we don't know, and whether the White House or something would intervene on a very good case of national security, steel being really a basic industry. Most foreign countries, France, Japan, China, consider their steel industries part of their defense. And so they're very careful about who buys into steel plants and who would consider closing them. We have a much more lackadaisical attitude that maybe in Maryland and appears to be changing now. And I think that as an observer here, I think that's a very important that someone represents the interests of Maryland workers and taxpayers, because if Maryland steel workers, retirees all lose their money here, the burden is going to be directly or indirectly on other state residents of the state.
Folks, if you're out there, 410-319-8888, I know you are, 410-319-8888, if you're living anywhere in this community, just to your thoughts on what this means to all of us. And maybe a lot of your fathers, mothers worked at that plant. A lot of you worked in that plant or do work in that plant. What's happening in the communities of Sparrows Point, of Dundalk, of Turner Station, Edgemere, places that lived by steel and are dying by steel in many ways? What are your thoughts about your own communities and what is happening there? 410-319-8888. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com over the next few minutes. I mean, how about the state of the communities? I mean, they're clearly devastated, have been devastated and changed profoundly.
They have been. One thing, this is really important that as someone who's written a book on the history of Sparrows Point and really studied this community as a reporter, writer, historian for now going on 35 or so years, is the steel industry and the steel communities that were built up that surrounded the steel industries really were apart from the rest of even the urban areas they existed in. Why? Because steel operates 24 hours a day.
Right.
The Sparrows Point is the Sparrows Point facility sprawls over around 16 times the size of the Inner Harbor. That's how large the Sparrows Point Peninsula is. It's almost 2 miles from one end of the plant to the other. And it created and it had its own police force in its heyday. It had its own company town. It created a way of life. And the workers had demands, hazards, networks that were unique to the steel mill. Certain ethnic groups had jobs in certain areas. And so there was a dense and complex social network that was built up at Sparrows Point. Remember, Sparrows Point was opened in 1891, so it's almost 120. It's 120 years old. Many of the men down there now have had fathers, grandfathers. There are up to four generations down there, and everyone in that community certainly knows someone in their family or certainly a neighbor who worked down there. So this is more than sort of a modern-day job. This is a way of life, and so the sense that this way of life might be coming to a close I would say that my sense of the community, and you know, is that there's a communal depression at the moment
because it is coming to an end. I don't. What can resurrect it?
Well, you know, we're still going to need steel in this country. Sparrows Point right now is on the ropes, definitely. It's on the ropes. But it has some very modern facilities there. It has a superb location. It has a dedicated workforce. It certainly could stand a chance, and if it could find some market niches, to find its way. So it's not, all doom and gloom. But there has to be some planning. There needs to be, I believe, some real intervention by those in power to take a look at this and assess, do we really want to lose this facility because a Russian-based company has some other plans? Is this in the long-range interests of Baltimore? And right now, and they're... These questions that are coming up right now are not really being looked at as closely as they should be, and it's one of the reasons why we've been spending a lot of time, a lot of articles on Sparrows Point, because we think this is a very crucial issue, and that we don't want people to think in a year or two, oh well, what happened here? How did this all just disappear? We're describing what's going on. Day by day.
And so as we close out here, what's going on in Turner Station? The last time we met, we were here with people from Turner Station, African-American community,
right.
Steelworking community that has been fighting issues of cancer. And
Turner Station, which is across Bear Creek from Sparrows Point, a black community, is, as you said, Mark, has suffered grievously through the decades from pollution at Sparrows Point. And a lot of that pollution has caused some serious repercussions in that community. Ironically now, very few people who now live at Turner Station actually work at the steel mill.
Right.
So they have gotten sort of literally the crap that comes over in the water currents and little of the economic benefit in the last, say, 15 to 20 years. There are, ongoing problems there, and there are serious problems, which we've also written about, in the whole issue of pollution. This is pollution that is in the soil and in the ground, and is, by scientists are finding, is migrating around parts of the outer Baltimore Harbor. And its effect on those local communities, anecdotally, there seems to be high incidence of asthma, certain aspects of cancer, but it has not been closely studied. And it is another aspect of this legacy. We might have a legacy of having a cancer, hot spot down there in the Turner Station, Edgemere area that might grow for many years.
We have to come back to that one another day and spend another hour on just on that issue and talk with Turner Station. Mark Reuter, thank you so much. Mark Reuter, who writes for the Baltimore Brew, broke the story about the company coming in to buy, could be coming in to buy Sparrows Point.
Possible.
And is covering steel and those communities for many years, and is the author of the book Making Steel. Mark Reuter, good to see you.
Thank you, Mark.
See you on the web at the Baltimore Brew.
Thanks.
We take a very short break and come back. I'm going to remind you on the way to break here that support for WEAA is provided by Chef Max Louisiana Cuisine, catering available for all holiday parties and special occasions. Open Monday through Friday, noon to 8 p.m., and Fridays and Saturdays, noon to 9 p.m., located at 4311 Hartford Road. 410-319-6227. That's 410-319-6227. Next, Johnny Slaughter, veterinarian. And your animals. Stay with us.